Open your eyes. Wake up, Link.
I'm Luke Summerhays.
I'm James J. Miles.
And I'm James the Jaster Stewart.
And you're listening to Hyrule Field Report. And Jas, what did we get up to
last week? We were wrapping up the labyrinth stuff in the game.
And Jay, what are we going to do this week?
This week we're going to continue our theme of wrapping up and hopefully effectively tick off pretty much everything else that we want to talk about in the game beyond the finale itself. Yeah, I feel I should clarify that with an asterisk, what we want to talk about. We've said this before, there is literally so much shit in this game that it's nigh impossible.
We've run into that before, right? Like, there's like a whole ton of side quests that yous have done that I've not done, so it's just because there's so much to do in the game.
That's it. And some of the shrines, they do eventually repeat similar style of puzzles and things like that. We're going to touch upon what we think is mostly all the interesting stuff, but again, this is a reiterating a call for questions and such. If there's anything that we haven't spoken about that you feel, I'd really like them to cover that, drop us a message, let us know, get in touch. Even if you just got just a random question that's unrelated to what we're talking about, get in touch, because we'd love to hear from y'all for a finale episode.
Yep, there's a lot of shrines, and especially up in the sky, where even if we did talk about it, we would not have anything interesting to say.
Correct.
About the second, third, fourth, fifth variation. So
yeah,
nobody wants us to do that.
Yeah, definitely not.
By the number, Shrine 52.
Yeah, if you can't tell by myself and Luke's voices today, we are a bit tired this pod as well, and we don't want to trouble yourselves with a retired rendition of the same type of shrine for the 4th or 15th.
Yeah, there is a noticeable drop in numbers when we're not doing like main story stuff. If you're one of those people, I'm pretty sure you've already stopped listening to this one. Like, oh god, they're talking about generic shrines and they're all sleepy and sick.
Yeah, that's, you never know what may happen in their delirium. But before, you better not have left yet, because you're about to miss a Zelda news update. Did any of you see some of the chat that came out of GDC about Tears of the Kingdom?
Did not.
No.
I saw the Mario Wonder stuff.
Yeah, so there was supposedly a real highlight of a chat, and I've not actually, actually watched the chat itself. I believe it's, I don't think it's up on YouTube yet or anything like that, but essentially they had, and apologies for my pronunciation of these names, but Takahiro Dota, who's a senior director, Junya Osada, who's a sound programmer, and Takahiro Takayama, who is a physics programmer, to do a talk at GDC. And they were talking specifically about how they expanded Tears of the Kingdom with, more physics-based gameplay and kind of evolved sound design, and how that all kind of went hand in hand with one another. And and supposedly it's a really interesting chat, and they showed like developer-only views, like they showed an image of the world just like in basically voxel form, just like made of cubes, like how the landscape and the topography is made up. The programming lead said, like when they were thinking of ideas like Ultra Hand and how that was going to work, he pretty much said, yeah, the more I thought, the more I worried, but in life it's sometimes important to have the courage to push forward. They were basically talking about how insanely complex this world was, and how the kind of design ethos was what they called it, multiplicative gameplay. Kind of the idea of like the actions and objects coming together and kind of creating so many possibilities for the player. And like when they had a prototype working of Ultra Hand, they were like, this is really exciting, but dear God, how are we going to get this working? And apparently, like in development, they'd have people that weren't working on the physics engine, like watching early prototypes where they'd put like a, they'd pick up a, like a rock and put it onto a cart carried by a horse, and the horse and cart would end up, just with the way the physics collided and worked with another, rocketing off into the sky. And and the other devs were like looking around worried, going, it's broken, what's going on? And they're like, ah, we'll fix it later, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
I think we like we touched on that a little bit when we were talking about like one of the shrines that has like the, where you pull the bridges together kind of to make them go, like they're all kind of folded up bridges, and then you're using like, vehicles to kind of straighten out the bridge so you can walk across it. Like, and I seen like a lot of developers were like super impressed by how the physics like works in Tears of the Kingdom. So I think that
it's
chat itself would be like really popular with a lot of developers.
Yeah, I suppose it's like when it was like a real highlight of the weekend, and this part was really interesting, and it wrinkles my brain actually trying to think about it. I'm gonna read IGN have an article up on about it. I'm just gonna read this paragraph word for word here. And see what your guys' takes on it, because I thought this sounds insane, and I'm not even going to pretend to understand what the, what it means, it's really. So they said, just like the design philosophy for the rest of the game sounds in Tears of the Kingdom, play in a system without dedicated implementation, and in some cases, abstract sounds combine to create something entirely new. For example, there is no dedicated wagon sound or paddle boat sound. These sounds are created by the wheels rolling or rotating on the water, with the quality changing based on the size, shape, and material. Osada said, it's making sounds that I have no memory of creating. Even the director told us, this is a basically like a physics engine, but for sound, right? So it was like, they didn't actually have like a dedicated sound for like, maybe like a bit of wood like slap in the water, if you create one of those like paddle boat things we've spoke about before.
I think the point is they did have a sound for wood slapping the water, and they had a sound for something rotating near water, but they didn't have a sound for a boat. It's just those sounds playing in unison add up to sounding like what you would imagine that paddle boat sounding like.
Yeah. And they also spoke about how, I spoke about how the world's made up like these 3D cubes, like voxels, and like each of these voxels kind of store an interaction about like, is a send possible in this location? Like it's incredibly complex as to how it all works and puts together, and I think it really drives home for me, like reading about this talk, and we've said as much, we're not off the camp that are calling this essentially Breath of the Wild 1.5, you know, extended DLC. It really drives home and kind of explains, I think, in a lot of ways, why this took so long to develop, why there's so much work getting put into this, because there are so many moving parts that you wouldn't even really consider upon first playthrough, but when you hear them spoken about by the developers, it's super interesting stuff, and I really do hope that I've not seen like the full talk uploaded anywhere yet. I don't know if GDC typically upload it.
I'm not
later.
Sure. Like most of the times, I just see like stuff on Twitter, like from little clips that people have recorded from like, from their phones and stuff. Mm-hmm.
I have watched a GDC speech in its entirety before, but we're talking many moons ago. I think it was Iwata.
I was going to say like all this.
I remember seeing clips and hoping I could see the full thing, so I'm looking forward to it.
I was going to say like all this stuff is like also like the perfect example of like what you would normally call Nintendo magic, because they just come up with the craziest ideas, and it's just like getting to work like without the player realizing what's happening is like just what makes that magic for me, at least.
Yeah,
we've spoken before about like famously they took a year just to test this game, and we have praised that. So we should touch on the other little bit of news that among all the many stories of games companies letting people go, there was a story about Nintendo of America restructuring their testing company. But I'm not sure if you can quite lump it in with the, you know, the horrendous layoffs that have been happening in other companies, because they have been asking, like, for quite a long time for Nintendo to shut down sort of the, I've forgotten, what's the word for when they kind of work for you but not quite?
Contractors?
Yeah, they've basically been using contractors, and it sounds like they're doing what everyone asked them to do, and switching over to,
like, in-house,
making them internal employees, which will solve some of the problems we heard about a few years ago about in those contract companies. There was some nasty goings on. But I did see some people saying, like, you know, games like Tears of the Kingdom needed a lot of testing. So, hopefully Nintendo's not letting too many testers go, you know?
Yep, it's a very key part of the overall experience. You know, you don't want to put out a broken game, and surely after debacles like Cyberpunk 2077, you know, the other big companies will be cognizant of
it. Well, a lot of companies, there's areas they are letting go of testers, though.
Yeah, it sucks.
Because I think it's just because we live in the age of the patch.
It sucks because...
Yeah, like the attitude of, like, we can just fix it later, like, type of thing.
Yeah.
Not realising that they would need people. They would need those same people that they probably just laid off to test it.
But also, like, I find it so much harder to find that enthusiasm for, like, oh, this game was bad, but now it's good, compared to a game launching and I'm, like, keen to play it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, first impression, like, goes a long way. Like,
yeah,
with anything, like, even with games as well, like, sometimes you just get one chance and, like, someone will try it once, and if it's, like, broken beyond repair, like, a lot of people just don't come back to that game. They're just like, that's broken, not playing it.
Like, even if I don't play it, I'll think to myself, like, oh, I'll pick that up once they say it's fixed.
Yeah.
But by the time I hear that it's fixed, you know, my lizard brain has moved on to something else.
Gaming moves so quick, right? Like, it's not going to be too long before the next shiny thing comes out to impress you. So a lot of games have a very short window of time to catch your attention, and it's only a rare handful that probably either have the resources to turn around a disastrous launch, or are able to build up enough goodwill and hype around their game to have a kind of successful second launch. Like Cyberpunk did it with the DLC that launched for that. They've kind of essentially turned that around. I think the most famous one's still going to be No Man's Sky, with what they did, putting out free content updates and pretty much totally reworking the game over the course of, you know, 5-6 years.
It's kind of like it's early access game at that point though, right?
But that's effectively what that game ended up being, exactly.
But that's also a very different story, because that's not
to do with like a company.
No, that was like an indie team getting a position they shouldn't really have been in.
Yeah, and that was more to do with features not being present, and that's early access. I suppose if we're talking about testing, then Cyberpunk is definitely the big example, right, with how much of a broken mess that was at launch. Interesting stuff. So yeah, I definitely recommend going out and looking at some articles at the GDC talk, and I don't know if there's any clips up on YouTube of the talk itself, but it's cool. I think GDC as a conference is really interesting if you're into that, you know, super nerdy side of gaming and really want to get deep in the weeds with how a game's made. It interests me. I love reading about that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Especially because that's often so rare from Nintendo as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. Like, it's very, very rare to get a window inside Nintendo, so I'm chuffed to send people along to the conference.
Should we talk about some shrines?
Talk about some shrines.
Yeah, yes. Where do you want to begin?
I'll just let you take us through your list, Jay. You're our guide.
Alrighty. Well, let's start with Shikoku Shrine, which I believe this one is located southeast of the Taifu Ruins. We might be speaking about that soon. We'll come back to that. This one, I remember, it's one where, it's a recall shrine, effectively, and you're using recall on gears. And there's the reason I remember this, and I want to see if you guys found this on your first go. There's a part where you connect up some smaller gears to basically fuel this massive gear, and effectively you've got to stand on like the spokes on the gear cog to actually get lifted up to the ending of the shrine. I'm pretty sure there's a similar puzzle right at the very start of the game, like the first use of...
Yeah, there's this puzzle in the Temple of Time, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. But the reason I remember this is because there's a nice little secret... it kind of refreshes what is something you're going to remember from the beginning of the game, where rather than just riding that big gear up and finishing the shrine, if you use recall on that big gear... You ride it down. Basically, the you can right stay on the cog, yeah, and it goes like under the floor. And there's a hidden chest underneath there, which you then use ascend to pop back up out of. It was cool. It's not an actual exciting reward. I think it's just a weapon, but it was like, oh, that's pretty neat.
Nice little almost like the kind of a different version of the waterfall, like secrets that you get in games. Instead of like a giant cog, and they're using the game's abilities. To look out for a secret. Pretty small.
There's an old Miyamoto line that was always reward the player who goes left.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, pretty interesting one. Next up, Kamatukas Shrine, which is up in, I think, the far north, a bit of Akala. This one's known as a Precise Strike, and this is one of my favourite shrines, and definitely one I had just a lot of fun playing about with, where you're effectively making like a giant golf club by attaching a big bit of metal to like the swinging pendulum.
Yeah.
You then pull back the pendulum and you've got to dunk this ball into like a little hole. I remember it being a lot of fun, and the sort of thing that I'm surprised it didn't make like a more robust mini game out of. Maybe I'm thinking of there was a stasis bowling minigame and stasis golf rather minigame in Breath of the Wild that I'm maybe thinking of. But yeah, had a lot of fun with this one. If you guys remember it.
I remember it because I think I've mistakenly called many other shrines this one.
Yeah.
I think this is the one you're finally getting a chance to talk about it, but even though you've probably already talked about it by proxy.
Yep.
Yeah, this one was pretty good. Like, it's kind of... Again, it just shows like the physics off like really well in the game. That you can kind of launch things like you could basically make a trebuchet if you wanted to.
Yeah. There I remember some really good clips coming out of this shrine where people would end up like dunting themselves with the giant pendulum, like just tumbling off into the abyss, which always funny. Some proper slapstick stuff. But yes. Moving on. Rasiwak Shrine, which is located to the northeast of the Akala Tech Lab, so we're still up in that region. This one is known as Flotational Brilliance, and it uses an item that I don't remember seeing in the game beforehand. We might have spoken about another shrine about this. It's basically these giant yellow balls that float in the water. And they're obviously flotation devices, and you have to use them basically to prop up a stone slab and make a boat or make a bridge with the stone slab. Otherwise, the stone slab would just sink to the bottom. It's not a flotational device.
Yeah, we've talked about them briefly because I don't think it's in this shrine, but in one of the other shrines, there's a puzzle that involves pushing it underwater so it shoots back up.
That's right, yes. I remember one where we talked about using the water tension and how the physics worked.
Yeah.
Being blown away by that. Very on brand for our chat at the start there.
The name of that shrine, Rasiwak, is kind of weird to me. It's almost kind of like another way of saying Scallywag.
Yummy Rasiwak.
Yummy Rasiwak.
Moving on to Kikakin Shrine, which is just west of the Great Hyrule Forest. This is one that I'm surprised we didn't speak about so far. It's a very interesting one, very unique. It's totally pitch black. So effectively you have to use as one of the Zonai lights and actually walk around the shrine, kind of essentially spelunking your way through the shrine. There's locked doors keys you need to find. There's like spikes on the wall, which I think you can quite easily walk into if you don't have a light source. There's lasers as well, which will catch you out. Hidden chests. It's a really involved shrine.
I do like the shrines that have like basically kind of dungeon keys. Like, and them, yeah. Like, I like when that happens in the shrines. It's just a good little throwback to your classic dungeons.
This ended up being one of those ones where you tap Ultra Hand just to see what things you can move.
Yes.
And then there's keys hidden behind little sections of the wall and stuff like that.
That's right, you could like pull out blocks from the wall, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember that now. I'm sure there was not like an area before a shrine in Breath of the Wild where like, you go underground and it's totally pitch black, almost like a proto depths in Breath of the Wild that kind of had this effect.
I'm sure there was.
Yeah, I think that's maybe what this has reminded me of. But moving on, as part of our shrine wrap up here, to this one's actually a shrine quest. Which Luke has put into the document as the snowboard one. This is the High Spring and the Light Rings. That's the name of the shrine quest to open up Zakusu Shrine. The shrine itself is just a proving ground. We're not going to talk about it, but the shrine quest itself, on you go, Luke.
Yeah, well, you get launched up to a sort of sky island. Mm-hmm. You have to snowboard on the sky island a little bit. Dive down to the mountain, keep snowboarding, shield surfing, going through rings. I got too into it and forgot that fall damage was in this game. So I just dropped down to the ground, and luckily I had fairies, but yeah, it didn't occur to me I had to actually use
my glider.
Paraglider. Yep.
I'm assuming it just sent you straight back to like restart. Or did you have to like...
If I didn't have the fairy, I guess it would have done.
No, it just revived me with the fairy. That is lucky then, because I'm pretty sure that you would have to make your way back up, right? Unless you had like a way to fast travel.
Do you think it was going to work?
I almost always have fairies.
Tony Hawk, and you were just going to like land on the ground and like immediately go into like a manual background and rail. Yeah, they missed the trick not having a Tony Hawk minigame like this. I mean, if Solid Snake can skateboard on...
They've got the rails for it in Tears of the Kingdom as well. Like, especially in the Sky Islands. Yeah.
Yep. Get Tony on the phone. That's our next crossover. We had Spider-Man in one of the Tony Hawk games. Get Link in the next one. Moving on. This one is another one that's sort of a shrine quest. Which is to unlock... Kurakat Shrine, which is just a blessing, but this one's a bit like one of the picture puzzles we were speaking about, where you've got to kind of use the landscape and the time of day to actually solve the shrine puzzle. Effectively, there's this big stone sort of construction that's on the ground, and there's the steward construct, which gives you a riddle, which it says, when the sun awakens in the sky, dye the white pattern black, then will the sacred shrine appear. So you've got to wait till a sunny morning happens, and there'll be, as the sun kind of rises, and you'll see a shadow begin to form, and there's like this sort of mural.
It's like a little art piece structure thing.
Yeah,
you just have to rotate it just right and pull out some sections.
That's right.
To make the shadow match the pattern on the wall.
Spot on. And that then solves the puzzle, which is pretty unique. Enjoy.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, I think for me, like that makes like the world like more believable as well. Like just because you just got to imagine, like obviously there's sun changing at different times of the day. It's going to cast shadows in certain spots. Really like it for that clever puzzle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but. Back to the physics stuff we were talking about at the start, right? The lighting and the sun moving through the sky and everything. This is very very Indiana Jonesy little puzzle.
Continuing with the Indiana Jonesy puzzle nature here for Ga-Ahisa's shrine, which is a Rauru's blessing, but this is up in the sky on Lightcast Island, where you've got to complete a light puzzle by reflecting light around a room, and you've basically got to rotate mirrors to direct a beam of light around the room. I think there's actually a unique way you can rotate it to get a piece of the Zonite set in this location, but you need to basically point it to this mirror, and eventually it'll shine on a shrine and open up the
shrine. Well, there's also a there's a sage's will in here.
Ah, there we go.
And I actually got that first.
Ah, okay.
And then it was like, okay, I'm done here, I guess. Removed the travel medallion that I dropped and went about my business, and then realized there's actually a shrine in there. And I had to, like, fly up there all over again.
Silly boy.
Yep.
Yeah, it's one of those, like, areas, isn't it? Like, when you're kind of rotate the base of the island to kind of to get the sage as well. Like the big Death Star things.
Yep.
The whole kind of light mirror puzzle, I mean, I know they've done the mirror shield as a gimmick in other games, but it really reminds me of the Earth Temple in the Wind Waker. I remember a lot of puzzles where you'd have to, like, stand in a beam of light and use the mirror shield to direct it to, like, a mirror to another mirror, which then shone on a statue that blew up.
Yep.
That's the one where you're palling about with Medley, if I remember rightly.
It's something that Zelda's done quite a few times, but it's also something that every game that tries to be a bit Zelda does.
Yeah.
Like, various
pretty
versions have done it.
Even do it again in this game, like, they've got it in the Lightning Temple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not just in shrines and a, like, hot hole, like, general thing that happens in the world.
I'm pretty sure one of the Tomb Raider movies has it.
Second one, isn't it? I think.
Yeah. Didn't the Goonies do this?
Every chance.
Sorry, I don't know what's the Goonies.
Or again, Indiana Jones, maybe.
Yeah. It definitely has Indiana Jones vibes, yeah. But with that, we've effectively spoken about all the shrines that we'd like to speak about, which I think leads us on nicely to talk about, well, what happens when you get all 120 shrines?
So I remember back in Breath of the Wild, the shrine reward was like that game's version of Link's outfit.
That's right, yeah.
Like the old school green tunic.
Yeah, that's
but right. The problem with that was I'd already unlocked a bunch of amiibo versions. And in my head, I see this Link in the blue. I don't see him in the old
outfit. Yeah, we spoke about that before, right? Like, where it's like, you play the game long enough, you have to complete all the shrines in Breath of the Wild, like, you're pretty much decided that the blue outfit's his canon outfit by that point.
Yep. And I think you could get that outfit, right? The Tunic of the Wild. Can you get that in Tears of the Kingdom?
You can. I think we've spoken about it before in the cast. It's like in the depths versions of the giant skeletons on the surface.
Okay, yep. We did talk about that. Yeah. But this time, we do get another costume. Although it's weird, it's not the usual three-piece armor set. It's you wear one item and it changes your complete appearance. And I think it's the only one of those in the whole game.
Yes, I'm pretty sure you're right.
I can't actually remember where we get it. Do we go to the big goddess statue again?
We go to the
Temple of Time, right?
Temple of Time, yes.
Yeah. And yeah, we get the costume of a legendary Zonai hero, which actually makes us into a little Zonai guy with, you know, a goat face and everything.
Yeah. Incredibly unique reward. Like.
Also, did you notice this guy has red hair? The disc of Breath of the Wild and, like, the big tapestry they use to tell the story of Ganon in that, the original hero who sealed the darkness had red hair.
Okay.
So I wonder if they're, like, without even realizing it, they were talking about a Zonai hero when they talked about, like, 10,000 years ago sealing Calamity Ganon.
Do you think that this hero is part of the cycle of reincarnation that's about with Zelda and Link and Ganon?
Yeah.
Or do you think it's just its own thing?
No, it might, maybe it's meant to be like, you know, Zelda loves doing this. The earliest one.
Yes.
Because Minish Cap, right? There was a hero before that which didn't wear a hat. So maybe they, maybe this goes all the way back to there. But I mean, it's in this, like, we can argue until the cows come home whether Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom are supposed to fit into the previously existing Zelda canon or be kind of separate. This would definitely be the earliest version of the hero in this version, I think.
Hmm.
I'm not gonna lie, when I first, like, equipped the thing, my initial reaction was, oh, I'm just like young Raru. and then obviously plugged in right there, and I'm like, wait a minute, that's not what that is.
Yeah. But it's very cool, and it's also like, this is a costume that's cool just to get, look at for a few minutes and think about.
Mm.
So it didn't bother me that I got it right at the end of the game when I've not really got any more game to play. Whereas, yeah, like we said with the Breath of the Wild one, it's like, oh, it would have been kind of nice to have this option early on and maybe play some of the game like this.
There's apparently some unique dialogue if you wear this in front of certain NPCs.
Makes sense.
Impa will comment on how you look similar to the figure on the tapestry, as you were talking about there, Luke.
Oh, really? Cool.
Yeah. I think Pura just compliments Link, but says, oh, I didn't recognise you. Tauro, I've never been able to pronounce his name right. He's like, oh my god, the ancient hero is resurrected!
nice.
The exact line is, the hero? The ancient hero? Oh, wait, you're Link. No. So, and Simon, who I think is a researcher also says he's the teacher at the school, isn't he? Yes, he's the teacher at the school. He says, that's the guise of the ancient hero. Well, where did you find that? You always surprise me, Professor Link. So it seems like people recognize it as the hero for that stopped the calamity so many years ago, and it's obviously a Zonai, but yeah, the red hair is interesting. Red hair always makes me think of Ganondorf.
Hmm. And yeah, back when Breath of the Wild released, that version of the hero, I guess he did kind of look more Ganondorf-y than Link.
Yeah.
I wonder if that like also ties into the hair colour being different for the Link and Link to the Past as well. He wasn't. Didn't have blonde hair in Link to the Past, did he? It was like pink.
That's right. Yep. Yeah. But yeah, pretty interesting. I think it's very this sort of thing is definitely this, like, just with the little bits of dialogue and the item description, definitely gives me like big Souls vibes where people are going to try and extrapolate and get as much more information about this one item as they can, but we're not going to have a clear, distinct answer. So it's a lot of fan theory crafting.
Mm. Oh no, they've moved on to the next Zelda and they're not even thinking about this anymore.
Oh, the devs? Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Fancy some side quests?
Yeah, we can squeeze in a couple.
Yeah. So one big one that we've actually somehow skip talking about, but it is a fairly involved one, is the quest to investigate the Typhal Ruins.
I think the reason we've skipped that is because we went near it quite early in the game, but you can't actually do it until quite late in the game.
Not true. You just need to have done one part of the regional phenomena.
Right, but you can't finish it until you've done all four.
Yep.
fact,
you are spot on. Yes, yes. So yeah, the this is up just north of the Great Hyrule Forest, and there's a Zonai researcher there. One of the members of the Zonai survey team who's like, oh, I need a research assistant. There's loads of riddles here that I keep finding on these monoliths, but I don't know what they mean. Can you help me out? So it's essentially, this is like one big umbrella quest that take up four component quests, which, as you mentioned, Luke, you can't actually finish until you have all four of the initial Sage's powers. So should we just go through these in the order we got the Sages?
Yeah, sure.
First up, we have the owl protected by dragons. And the,
I think this was the one I spent the longest finding.
This is the riddle which says, display the power of the Sage of Wind to the owl protected by many dragons.
And basically, there's a big owl statue surrounded by dragon statues.
I'm
but there's also an
cool
awful lot of vaguely owl-like statues and vaguely dragon-like statues. So
yeah, it's interesting because the Typhlo Ruins itself, it's not a small area. It does take up a fair bit of land, this landmass. So I definitely spent a while traipsing about finishing all four of these. And I think there was definitely one, could have been this one, that I was doing laps.
You're talking about as well, right? Like, can I deal with them before you can continue your search?
Like some constructs in that, right? Yeah, I think you're right. But yes, if you find the owl statue, you activate Tulin's ability, blow a big gust of wind towards the owl. The owl's very impressed. He claps his wings together. He's very happy with you. the statue will raise up. There's a chest in there. That's one part ticked off. Pretty neat. Next up. The corridor between two dragons, which is display the power of the Sage of Fire to blaze through the space between two dragons from head to tail.
Yep. So these are like long dragons along the floor, kind of like a wall. So you stand at the end where the head is, send Yunobo down the road between the two. Like, I guess they're just big snakes.
Big serpents, yeah.
And yeah, same it. Same again.
They're dragons. do not lessen the importance of the ancient dragons.
I've actually, you know what? I'm going to do a little bit of research while you keep talking.
Okay. But I think at one part of these dragons, there is one of the owl statues that's not the owl statue from the Chulin solution. So, like you were saying, they look. They will.
I definitely remember. I spent a little bit of time on this. Dragon one to kind of just find the right path. Initially, I think I just approached it from like the opposite end.
You were doing from tail to head rather than head to tail.
Oh, I could find the head.
Someone didn't read the riddle.
No, I did. I just couldn't find the head.
But yeah, once you do that, fire Yunobo down between the two dragons. Again, something that will rise up from the ground. Some rubies you get, and that's another riddle. Ticked off. Staying with dragons, we have the long dragon, where we have to display the power of the Sage of Lightning at the end of the long dragon that protects the Mountain of Death. This is the one that I spent a while on. So, because it's not like the two dragons from the last puzzle, it's the dragon itself, essentially, you can only really see like the head of the dragon properly. The actual body of the dragon, it just looks like a raised pathway, kind of going around the whole Typhlo Ruins and looping in and out and around. So it's quite difficult to find until you clock on, this seems a bit suspicious, let me follow this path. And you might be unlucky and end up at the tail, like Jasper did the last puzzle. But once you get to the end, you need to get to it's the tail you need to get to this one. You then shoot an arrow after creating a big lightning field with Riju's power. And again,
oh, okay, you want to hear something interesting?
I do.
Earlier you were talking about, was there an area around a shrine in Breath of the Wild that's jet black?
Was it Typho Ruins and Breath of the Wild?
Yes, it was.
Okay. There we go.
Yeah. I was thinking, like, I bet this place was in Breath of the Wild, but I don't remember any details.
Mm.
Yeah, this was the... So it kind of looks the same... Like, I think these same statues and structures are here, but you could barely see them because you're going around in pitch black,
okay.
Lit by occasional torches.
That's cool they expanded upon that then, and this made it actually a chance to properly explore the area and gave you a reason to explore it as well.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah. But lastly, to take us home, staying with dragons, this time it's six dragons. We need to display the power of the Sage of Water in the presence of six dragons. This one's fairly easy to find. You just find six dragon head statues. You then create a water shield with Sidon's power, squish them at the dragons, a big thing will fly up, and that will tick that off. Job's a good one. Don't remember having any problems with that one myself.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to find that one. Pretty sure it was like the first thing I found.
Oh, there's a bloody Hinox in it.
What it was.
And once you tick that off and finish all four, there'll be another hidden passageway that'll be revealed. Inside there, the quest NPC will turn up, and you'll mention, oh, this is a reward for those that have discovered and fully explored the Typho Ruins. There's a chest inside which gets you the Dusk Claymore, which is modelled after the Sword of the Six Sages in Twilight Princess, which was the sword that Ganondorf used in that game, that he'd been stabbed by the Six Sages who tried to seal him away. If you remember that game's plot at all, it's like the white sort of glowing sword.
Yeah. I remember the cutscene of him being like executed.
Yeah. But he broke free and delivered a very edgy line where he said, "Would you hear my desire to take this foul blade and use it to blot out the light forever?" So, yes. But you can use it to protect the light forever in Tears of the Kingdom.
Or you can put it in your house
and use it as a light.
Correct. Fancy a few more side quests before we wrap up?
Let me have a little peek at your list to see if there's any that I think we ought to talk about.
Well, there's one that I want to talk about, which is like kind of a double bill, which is the cold and hot endurance tests that you do against an NPC up in the mountains, where you both basically stand on top of a pillar, and it's either like through the night or through the day up in the... up near the desert, and you basically got to not wear any armor at all. So you're both basically standing up there.
Type training.
yeah. But unfortunately for the NPC, you can cheat by pretty much just taking like elixirs and things food. To keep you protected. Yeah. Food, yeah. So he's sitting there absolutely dying, and Link's just munching some mushrooms and doing absolutely fine.
Yeah, but where does Link store all that food if you're not wearing armor?
Prison pocket. there's another one that I definitely wanted to speak about as well, which is up on the Great Sky Island. There's actually a side quest up there called The Legend of the Great Sky Island, which talks about this sort of ritual that once happened up there, this sort of celebration, this trial of sorts, where you've got to light these bonfires without touching the ground. And if I remember rightly, it effectively makes kind of converts the whole island into like a mini game, where like, I don't know if low gravity gets affected, but there's definitely these like big updrafts of wind that you can use to keep your momentum gliding, you know, staying up in the sky. You've basically to shoot arrows, burning arrows, and these giant piles of wood that are on top of these like floating monoliths. across the Great Sky Island.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. It is. It definitely is. I think it's actually on top of the Temple of Time at the same place you get the reward for the finishing all the shrines. So
must have like activated like after I initially picked up like the shrine armor.
Yeah, it's worth doing. It's a good laugh that one, and you know, pretty unique. But yeah, with that we've pretty much covered all that we want to talk about in terms of side quests and such.
Yep.
What's next?
We completed the land, we completed the sky. So next up for us is another dive down to the depths.
So continue with the main quest. We still don't actually know where Ganondorf is, and once you've got the last sage, they did suggest that you should follow the investigations that are going on down in the depths to maybe find out what's going on with that. And of course, when we last left off, Koga had gone off to the abandoned Hebra mine for the last part of his quest. But getting to the depths part of Rito Village is, it's difficult because there's no actual... It's all cut off from the land, so as you know by now, water in the depths is impassable rock, and there's no clear chasm or anything up in Rito Village, so how the hell do you get down there? This took me longer than I'd like to admit.
I've definitely been there, and right now I don't remember how I got there.
Mm-hmm.
So if you potter about the village up above, you'll find the Zonai researcher. He'll be like, Joshua asked me to have a look around for a chasm. I think it's down this hole, and he's standing near this pit, and if you jump down there, it'll take you through a little cave underneath the village, and you'll find a very small chasm that you can drop through, which will then take you into the depths, down to the abandoned Hebra mine. So it's very well hidden. You don't actually see the chasm on the map itself.
Unlike, right, because it's in a cave.
Yeah.
Because it's in this cave, yeah. So
there's another one like that that's quite close by to it on a little island just slightly south of Hyrule Castle. As well, it's like an island cave, and then you drop into a chasm.
Is that chasm not down a well or something mad like that?
No, I think there's just like a little cave on the side of the island.
I remember there being one down the... something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Well, fortunately no well spelunking required here. We end up in the abandoned Hebra mine, and we get to the finale of the Koga fight, where he says, I've been collecting lots of crystallite charges as I've been going about, so... we've been working really hard, and the Yiga clan have made the ultimate weapon here to take you down.
I love this so much.
He jumps on something that will be very familiar to us, having done the fifth stage quest, his own Zonai construct, just like the one we have. You can do this before getting the fifth stage, right?
Yeah, I think I did.
Wow, I didn't.
I don't remember having a second... robot boss fight.
Yeah, same
here. I think I did.
But maybe I'm wrong.
Did I do this a while ago?
To be fair, it's easy to forget these things.
It's been a while, yeah. But yeah, you see, still obviously beatable if you don't have your big robot buddy. But if you do,
you're mostly just taking pot shots at his head with your butt.
That's right. Yeah, he's not like he's in a. He's not. It's not like a full mech where he's inside the robot, and you've got to take him down.
Dr. Eggman.
There's actually a lot of Eggman energy from Colvin.
I think we've even said that before in this podcast that he's
brilliant.
Got Robotnik vibes in this game.
Yeah, maybe I think it was Team Rocket vibes we said for sure.
They
I think as he blasts off at the end, right?
Yeah.
Action.
Yeah. So there'd be points where he does something quite similar to his boss fight in Breath of the Wild, where he'll create these giant like bombs like above him, and if you shoot the bombs, I think they drop down and like smash a force field that comes around him, which you can then shoot him, knock the suit into electrified fence, and eventually that'll knock him onto the floor, and he'll be able to actually smack him around. But yeah, very, very fun. And now that I think about it, I think I did do this before doing the fifth stage, because I remember thinking, holy shit, this is like so cool. Like, I've not done anything like this in this game yet, which obviously had you done the fifth stage, it's maybe not as fresh, but it's a nice twist on it, because you've got Koga using all his mad Yiga clan powers on you, right? So
Yeah, it's a fun boss fight. And then you destroy that robot, and Koga pulls out his second form.
Yep.
The ultimate weapon that he was planning to give to the Demon King. It's a Wile E. Coyote style, like 100 rockets taped together.
It's so good.
And yeah, basically, doesn't he just like get it caught on his pants and fly away and explode?
Pretty much, yeah. He does divulge to you, he was going to give this to the Demon King, who is...
Right, yes, so the reason below... we come here is because...
He says the Demon King is below Hyrule Castle, so we eventually now know what we pretty much had sussed out, that Ganondorf is deep, deep down below the castle in the depths, which is where we'll be heading very shortly. But sadly, Koga does not get his triumphant reunion with Ganondorf, because his giant Acme weapon does backfire.
That'd be funny if he did, like...
I would have liked to have seen Koga meet Ganondorf, yeah. Because I feel like Ganondorf would have no actual affection for him at all.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. I was like, if they did meet, like, Ganondorf would be like, who are you?
Yeah.
I don't even
just,
know you.
Give him a backhand and leave him on the floor. Who's she? I don't know her.
It's... Have you, you've read Dragon Ball, right, Luke?
Yeah.
I don't know if this is in the manga, it probably is. Do you know the character Mr. Satan?
Yeah.
Like, there's a part in the manga where he squares up to Cell. he squares up to Cell, and Cell's like just looking at Goku, like going, come on, I want to fight an actual opponent here. And Mr. Satan's like this big... He's basically a big fraud. He is strong, but he's not like... You know, these world-ending
entities. The joke is
entities.
Like, he's strong by human standards, but Dragon Ball's power levels have gotten so ridiculous.
Yeah, and but he kind of buys into his own hype at this point, and he's like, mm-hmm. he's like, yeah, brother, Mr. Satan's gonna take you down and run wild on you, brother. And he pretty much just gets backhanded, slapped, flies off into a cliff. So I imagine that's what happened if Ganon met Koga.
Yeah. Is it the eventual joke that he gets the credit for beating Cell?
Yes. Because they were filming it initially. Because he's like this big celebrity in this world. But yeah. The cameras all get exploded once Goku and Cell start fighting. So the last thing, after this all happens, because all the main fighters don't really want the attention that comes with saving the world. Mr. Satan's like, yeah, brother, I got knocked around a bit, brother, but then I took down that nasty Cell, brother. Yeah.
Nice.
He does end up actually saving the entire world at the very end of the series. So,
oh, nice.
So he has his moment.
Yep. Rest in peace.
Yeah, rest in peace, Toriyama.
Rest in peace, Master Koga. The Flavor Flav of
the Yiga clan. Yeah, boys! He flies off to the distance.
But yes, that takes us nicely to... Well, we're in the endgame now.
Indeed.
It's time to go and tackle Ganondorf himself and save the world. But of course, indeed, you'll have to join us for that next time.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, please do rate and review, like and subscribe wherever you're listening. And if you have thoughts about the end game or basically any part of the game or about this podcast itself, please do get in touch. We're on Twitter at Hyrule Field Pod. We have a Facebook, Hyrule Field Report. You can leave a comment on a YouTube video. I have to remember to upload more podcasts as YouTube videos. You can probably email us at hyrulefieldreport@gmail.com, but I don't even know if I still have access to that, so maybe don't do that. I'll double check it before next week's episode.
I bet you're going to open it. We've got like 17 crazy sponsorship deals.
And you could just write in an Apple Podcast review for stuff that you want us to say on the next, on our wrap-up episode if you want.
But only if you leave it with a 5-star review. I'm kidding.
Oh, no, I'm not. If you don't leave a 5-star review, you're not getting that into the questions. Cheeky bugger. 2 stars, why are you so boring? We're not answering that question. My mum told me she was listening to the radio once when she was a kid, and they had some pop star on, and he was taking questions from the public, and someone managed to get on and just be like, why are you so shit?
reminds me of the era, there's like a football manager, Gordon Strachan, getting interviewed, and an interviewer asks him, can I get one word? And Gordon Strachan just turns around and says, velocity, and walks away.
Velocity?
He asked him for one word.
Yeah.
Yep.
The correct response would have been no.
You know what I would have said. I'm not going to say it on this podcast.
No, we're a much wiser and more cultured podcast, because of course we've been delivered with many, many weeks of some sage words of advice from our main man Jas, and I think even though we're still approaching the end game, we're still needing that sage word of advice. If you would please.
Yep. Did you know turtles can never have sleepovers because they always sleep at home?
Quite like that. That's good. Well,
see ya.
Cheerio.
Catch us next time.